good afternoon, everyone. I'm really delighted to be here. I first got to know Guy because he literally kicked off my academic career. I did a little mission in my final year at law school to Nepal, where I worked with UNHCR on Bhutanese refugees, sent off this incredibly long manuscript to the International Journal of Refugee Law, and Guy published it. So it was my first publication ever. And then a couple of years later, when I didn't know what to do with my life, I was bored in my job for the Australian government, wanted to buy myself a couple of years. I saw doing a DPhil at Oxford would be a great plan. The problem was applications closed in like a day or two, and I still didn't have a topic. So I jumped on UNHCR's website, and I don't think I've ever told Guy this, but there was a little box on the front page of the website saying "Hot Topics of the Month." and back in 2001, that was IDPs, internally displaced persons. So I knocked up this application, fired it off to Guy. He said yes, miraculously, and I came to Oxford. The problem then was, of course, a Cambridge PhD student then published her PhD, Catherine Fong, on IDPs about 6 months into my DPhil here at Oxford. And so it stole my thunder completely, and so I had to ditch my topic. And because I knew Guy was the refugee expert, I was hunting around for another topic, and this was just after 9/11, and so terrorism was an obvious choice. I ended up doing my thesis on defining terrorism in international law. But I stuck with Guy because I looked into his record and saw that he'd actually done quite a bit of work on security as well, which is what I want to talk about today, Guy's legacy of international law and security. I should say, of course, that Guy almost didn't stick with me because after being at Oxford for 2 years, I was having a great time doing all kinds of things other than my thesis. I get this letter from Guy on formal notepaper from the university saying words to the effect of, "Dear Ben, after 2 years of full-time study, I would have expected a reasonably diligent student to have given me at least one full draft chapter." I hadn't given him anything at that point. And so it was actually just the kick in the pants I needed. And I sat down and belted out a DPhil in about 6 months, not using the UNHCR website. I got over the line in the end. I want to say a few words about Guy's contribution to security and international law. Before I say that, I'd like to pay my respects to Guy for the mentoring and support he's given me over the years. Those of you who know Australia, Guy, of course, spent quite a bit of his career in Australia in the early days for UNHCR. He's come back to Australia many times to UNSW with Jane and to present at many conferences and advise our government and UNHCR and so on. So we regard him as a bit of an honorary Australian. But the thing about Australian men, if you know our culture, is that we're notorious for not talking about our emotions. So I can't gush about how fond I am of Guy, because Australian men don't do that in public. But the highest compliment I can pay him in our culture is to say that Guy and I have become so intimate that we talk about power tools and garden sheds and home maintenance. And that's pretty much what Australian men talk about. Okay, I want to say about three areas in which Guy has contributed to international law and security. And the first one goes way back to one of Guy's very earliest publications, International Law and the Movement of Persons Between States, his first book. It was an outgrowth of his PhD, published in 1978. From what I can tell, it was maybe the second publication, academic publication, Guy put on the record. The first, of course, was an article about the right to picket, published in about 1976 or 77. Guy was channeling Jeremy Corbyn at that point. Moved back into the mainstream shortly after and hasn't said a lot about the right to picket ever since. But in International Law and the Movement of Persons Between States, Guy has a chapter on the justification of expulsion for expulsion of aliens. And I think this is a really important contribution he made early on, because it has lasting significance in debates which are recurring today. And what Guy found by reviewing state practice is essentially this. Yes, there's a wide margin of appreciation accorded to states in their decision whether to expel somebody, but it's not an entirely plenary sovereign power, nor an absolute sovereign power. As he puts it, quote, liberty, the liberty of states is not complete to throw someone out of the country. States must balance their own interests against the rights of the individual. And this has been a kind of recurring concern in Guy's career, that one of the highest purposes of international law is to look out for the interests of the individual when arrayed against all the power of the state and the international community. And Guy went on to say the state must show reasonable cause to expel somebody. Expulsion is a drastic measure. It therefore requires substantial justification. And even if courts are reluctant to review expulsion decisions, governments can't be let get away with vague justifications for turfing someone out of the country. He went on to say, you need to establish a positive ground of expulsion, like, for example, public order or national security. And secondly, the process has to be fair. Giving a person the right to be informed of the allegations against them, to see enough of the evidence against them so that they can effectively challenge the decision and that their lives are not turned upside down without reasons, proof, or on the basis of mere accusation or speculation. Why I think this has lingering significance? Three reasons. One is because 2 years ago, the International Law Commission adopted its draft articles on the rights of aliens in the expulsion process and really turned the clock back before what Guy had written in 1978 and adopted a kind of really weak, disappointing and thin procedural view of international law on the expulsion of aliens. And essentially, the International Law Commission simply said governments just have to, the expulsion of aliens just has to be lawful according to domestic law. In other words, there's no requirement of a substantive reason such as a grounding in national security or public order and so on. And as one International Law Commission member said to me in passing, anecdotally some years ago, he doesn't think there is any international law on the expulsion of aliens. So I think that's a really disappointing position that we got from the International Law Commission. Secondly, on the due process element, Guy wrote in a slightly different context, but I think the words here are apposite. We've seen post-9/11 the return of what Guy has called, quote, secret men in secret rooms reading secret memos. In other words, this idea that aliens' rights, refugees' rights and so on can be overridden, limited, suspended and so on based on undisclosed national security or intelligence information, which is virtually unreviewable before the courts. And in Guy's own practice, in a case like Hoffman and Secretary of State 2009, Guy was part of a team before the House of Lords precisely challenging closed hearings involving undisclosed security information, a low standard of review, which really leaves people high and dry. And I think in international law we like to think of the march of human rights as this kind of linear progressive story which over time the good guys win. But in an area like this, I think you really see precisely how international law is often one step forward, two steps back. And there's this kind of circular motion of going back, in some ways, to where we were in the 1960s and 70s, fighting the IRA. Thirdly, in this area, most recently, Guy's been very active challenging government plans to deprive suspected terrorists of their citizenship, including in circumstances which violates a state's obligations not to make a person stateless. But here I think Guy said something also just as interesting, and I'm picking up here on a point Emma made, which is Guy's not just coming at this from the vantage point of this is bad for the rights of the person who has been denationalised, It's also, according to Guy, and I agree entirely with this, bad for international security. Because if you want to make the world safer, as the Security Council has required states to do, you've got to prosecute terrorists. You don't just cut them loose, toss them out of the country to keep blowing up people in other countries, as long as it's not our own country. It also, I've got to say, doesn't make Britain safer, because, of course, those people are then free to base themselves on the internet in North Africa or wherever and radicalise people to precisely go and blow up people in London. Okay, the second area then I'd like to suggest Guy's made an important contribution is in the area of refugees and security. I want to indicate a couple of areas here where he's said some important things. He's turned the security paradigm on its head and talks frequently of human security in the context of refugees. So the first point here then is that mass insecurity of people in foreign countries is a cause of flight of refugees. And in the 1990s, Guy wrote a bit about how large-scale displacements had attracted the attention of the Security Council, and finally it seemed like the international community might be interested in averting crises which fundamentally make people insecure and provoke flight. Secondly, during flight, so once refugees are on the move, Guy's spoken a lot about how refugees themselves are grossly insecure. Whether it's people in refugee camps in Africa, people on the move crossing international borders, not getting temporary protection along the way, the closing of borders, interdiction, detention, we'll hear that whole story tomorrow, but also the lack of solutions for people to give them a sense of safety and security. Thirdly, and this is, I think, one of the biggest areas of concern post 9/11. Guy's tried to beat back this view by the international community after 9/11 that refugees themselves ought to be seen as a serious security threat. He has criticised the unwarranted linkages drawn by both the Security Council and the General Assembly between terrorism and refugees, saying that these linkages really are unwarranted. As he said in an article, and I'll quote a short paragraph here, some years ago, it's almost a truism that the terrorist, any more than the criminal, will not usually seek admission to a country by going through the detailed examination, photographing, fingerprinting and other verification procedures which are now a regular part of the asylum process. It's also the case that recognised refugees have rarely, if ever, been found amongst those guilty of terrorism or incitement. Such inconvenient facts are commonly ignored by legislative zealots for whom rights and security tend to have only one self-regarding dimension. And as Guy's career progresses, you get this increasing sense of exasperation that governments are increasingly not doing the right thing. And he goes on to write about the suite of draconian powers adopted in the UK, the US and a pile of other countries ever since. But I think this is a feature of Guy's work. He doesn't just criticise. He goes on to offer solutions as well. And he says, look, human rights law, the Refugee Convention, all of these instruments adopted immediately after the Second World War were precisely adopted at a time when the drafters knew all about security threats and knew, indeed, much more about security threats or had more recent experience of security threats than we do today. I mean, this is a war when 50 million people were killed, when we faced down and defeated the Nazis and Japanese imperialism. And so for modern politicians today to say, oh, somehow the drafters of human rights and refugee conventions didn't accommodate security concerns is entirely ahistorical and anachronistic. Guy goes on to warn of the threat of democracies reacting repressively and incompatibly with democracy and rule of law values. Of course, he's practiced in this area. He was counsel in the case of Al-Siri and DD in 2012, which was a case about whether terrorist acts are contrary to UN purposes and principles under Article 1C of the Refugee Convention, attacks on the ISAF forces constituting threats to the UN and so forth. Next, Guy has also expressed a concern in this context of refugees and security about the insecurity of those expelled or transferred, i.e. who aren't given safety for various reasons. So in Othman, he acted in a case challenging the quality of assurances, diplomatic assurances, regarding return to torture in Jordan. In Al-Sadoun, transfer by British forces into Iraqi custody with a risk of the death penalty. And in Al-Rawi, whether refugees who weren't British nationals ought to be entitled on a non-discriminatory basis to the same diplomatic protection representations made by the British government towards the Americans challenging Guantanamo Bay prosecutions. Finally, on security, Guy's talked about the history of security and refugees, and he wrote a very interesting article called The Politics of Refugee Protection some years ago, where he talks all about how the Cold War and the Soviet threat and so on shaped international understandings of protection and the scope for protection in the Cold War period, and the Soviets seeing refugees from Russia, for example, as spies, saboteurs, traitors, criminals, and viewing the refugee regime in very ideological terms. Okay, to wrap up then, I think I'd just point to a third area in which Guy has made an important contribution on security, and that is in the area of international humanitarian law. He wrote a very significant book on child soldiers well before it was fashionable and flavour of the month in the 1990s. He's done a lot of work on Palestine, both representing Jordan in the Israel security wall case, writing advices about UN membership and popular representation, the Palestinian elections and the democratic transition. He acted in the Al Jeddah case in 2008 concerning security detention under UN Security Council resolutions and whether that overrode due process protections, and the short answer of the British courts was yes. The later answer of supranational courts was no. And finally, of course, Guy has taught the law of war for many years, including when I was here as a student. So to conclude, I once said to Guy long ago, I don't want to be pigeonholed as the terrorism guy for the rest of my life, because that's what my PhD was about. And you said you feared the same for you, being, you know, pigeonholed as the refugee guy. I, by the way, don't think it's a bad thing to be known as the world's most preeminent refugee expert. But if you want more than that, fine, I'll get you. You're also a leading voice on security and international law, humanitarian law, international criminal law, human rights law. You've got a lot of strings to your bow. But I think you've been a voice of moderation. You've placed the individual at the centre of international law. You've insisted on a healthy suspicion of executive secrecy claims. You've defended the importance of judicial control in the democratic process while being aware of judicial deference sometimes being overbroad and judges not doing their job as they should. You've said, quote, "The courts are not an undemocratic, unelected force, but a central participant in the democratic process where power and policy are to be exercised responsibly, accountably, and within the rule of law." You've said terrorism doesn't threaten democracy. Another example of Guy's scholarship is his wry humour. He goes on to say, quote, "One of the strengths of democracy, after all, is the very expendability of prime ministers," which I thought was a nice, nice touch. And you finish one article, and this is where I'll finish, with a kind of call for arms. So, again, characteristic of Guy is he's, on the one hand, a dispassionate scholar, but at the same time, an impassioned or engaged humanist. I've got a little postcard on my door which says, has, you know, like a dandy sitting on a desk saying, "I was meant to lead the revolution, not teach." It's a great card. At the end of an article, Guy quotes Albert Camus and says, quote, "For if we are all in the plague, so we must all of us resist falling victim." And I think that's a nice summation of much of Guy's work in this field. Thanks.